You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we never had to take any of it seriously. Thank you for choosing us as your post-election respite. And if you know others who could use a place to escape all of the noise that is going on right now, send them our way. Tell a friend, tell a family member, because as always, referrals are our number one source of tourism. As I just mentioned, we are in the post-election part of the four-year or eight-year, as it would be this time, presidential cycle. And it's caused a lot of, shall we say, insane reactions for a lot of people. Maybe over the top is a better term to use. We've seen a lot of hysteria, basically. A lot of the world is ending. A lot of Chicken Little, the sky is falling. A lot of sadness and depression. I, however, have had an opposite reaction that is perhaps equally as strange. I now have the inability to take any sort of political rhetoric and political discussion seriously. To me, it is all hilarious. Let me give you an example. One of the things that's being thrown around now is that Hillary Clinton not being elected president has somehow set women back in this country. As if all of the strides that have previously been taken as women's suffrage and people like Amelia Earhart and Eleanor Roosevelt just don't matter anymore. Because somehow we didn't elect Hillary Clinton as president, we hate women in this country. As if now the WNBA is just disbanded and the U.S. women's soccer team is canceled. Or maybe they're going to call Scarlett Johansson into the Marvel headquarters and just the Russo brothers are going to sit her down for a meeting and say, "So Scarlett, we have some bad news for you. Donald Trump's the president now, so you're out of the Avengers." Or Gal Gadot is going to get called into the Warner Brothers office and they're going to tell her, sorry, Gal, we're going to cancel the Wonder Woman movie. She's going to be like, why? Is it because, you know, Zack Snyder executive produced it and everyone hates him? Is it because the critics have been so harsh on Warner Brothers and you want to reboot? No, it's because we didn't elect the woman that 50% of the country hates. Basically, what this comes down to is the rhetoric that's been going around, and as Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert, has alluded to, the hypnosis and the persuasion that has gone on. They've basically convinced everyone that Donald Trump is Hitler. And can we just stop saying that people are Hitler? Can we stop saying that someone's the next Hitler? We go around and we say it like it's some sort of airborne communicable disease. Reagan was the next Hitler. W was the next Hitler. Now, Romney was the next Hitler. Now, Trump is the next Hitler. It's like you just sneeze on someone. It's like, tag, you're hit. I mean, when are people going to realize that that is what Trump did? He used that to his advantage. That is how he got elected. He harnessed that. So everyone's going around right now. They're saying, love Trump's hate. Love Trump's hate. But the truth is, the more you say that, the more you empower him. You're saying it's the doomsday for our society? Well, did you look at what happened with Doomsday and Batman versus Superman? The more you attacked him, the stronger he got. So you can go around all you want and say, love Trump's hate. But the truth is, Trump loves hate. Joining me this week via G-Chat from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, are people going nuts there like they are in other cities in the country?
There's more of a general malaise here, a certain sense of ennui that maybe hasn't set in other parts of the country, mostly because all the young millennial hipsters here believe that their entire sense of life is now gone, like that Trump's going to come in and he's going to close all the trendy Argentinian restaurants and make sure that only Starbucks and McDonald's survives.
Or
how the
whatever
town
country
feels.
Melania's from.
Yeah. There hasn't been real mass protests here. We had a little protest outside of Trump's hotel, the place where he's going to live when he's president of the United States.
Yeah, I thought
And
about working that in.
other than that, it's sort of business as usual, which is probably a sign that things are going to be just as bad as they were under President Obama, because I don't think the bureaucrats really think that they're going anywhere. The administrative state is now so huge and so much of an entity unto itself that I don't think they're particularly afraid of any incoming president. So, drain the swamp was a nice little catchphrase, but it's going to be a little harder than just saying it.
I think that's true of a lot of what Trump promised and a lot of what their hashtags were, such as build that wall, which they would love chanting.
10 feet higher now.
Also joining us in his return to the program from a long hiatus via Chat from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you on the program again.
Oh yeah, man, it's great to be back. And that was that election. Holy balls. I was in the middle of tutoring. I was gonna just watch a movie with, I was just gonna tutor and watch a movie with my girlfriend. And that was my, I like, I didn't, I was not going to watch the election. It's like, oh, I was just ready for a Hillary presidency. I was completely just resigned to that. And then as I'm tutoring a kid, I'm like, hey, I wonder what's happening with the election. And I look real quick on my phone, being a bad tutor and, looking at my phone while tutoring. And I look, and Trump is way ahead, and I see that he won some of the Rust Belt states. And I just said, what the shit? Right in front of the 4-year-old kid. No, I didn't do that. But and he was a teenager, so it probably would have been fine if I said, what the shit. But and I was so surprised. I was not ready to even consider this, and I found myself very distraught over the entire situation. I was just whole, and I just I actually like just needed to just sit down with my girlfriend and some of my friends and just talk about this. Just holy crap, like what do we do now? Like what does this mean for the culture? And I found myself very distraught, very pessimistic about what this means for the culture. I'm a little bit more optimistic now that I'm seeing that Trump might actually do some of the things he's saying, but we'll see. I still don't trust him. I trust him a little bit more now that he's still saying it now that he's president, but I'd love to see the EPA destroyed. I'd love to see Obamacare reversed. I'd love to see a tax cut. I'd love to see a lot of these things. Don't want to see NAFTA repealed, but it's going to be really tough for him to get through Congress on that one. This could be okay, but the thing is I think this is a sign that the damage has already been done to the culture. So a very, very strong reaction to this election for me.
Well, of course, he the first thing he did as president was disrupt the sacred proceeding of Netflix and chill for you.
Indeed.
But you know where
President-elect
he
was
isn't disrupting?
disturbed Netflix.
Apparently Trump trumps love, but yeah.
But you know what he isn't trumping? Our program and the way it works. So let's go into the news with Daniel T. Richards.
For the sixth day in a row, anti-Trump protests continue across the country. Multiple bits of rioting and vandalism and destruction of property. In California, people were arrested in the Bay Area specifically. Demonstrations continued in San Francisco, downtown Los Angeles. Students walking out of classroom, marching in the streets. People on the Golden Gate Bridge. It's chaos. It's cats laying down with dogs. What is going on? It's the end of the world. At least that's how the media would have you see it. I don't know what you guys think about the protesting here. There's a certain I sort of am two minds about the protesting. One is that it's probably not actually as big as the media is going to have you believe. The protest in D.C. was all of, I think, 11 people at the Trump Tower, one of whom was holding a sign that said, "Rape Melania." Culture. And
I thought Trump was the one who wanted rape culture.
That was before he won. Now, now we're basically the Islamic State. So
yeah, I can't tell if your interpretation of that is correct or my interpretation. My interpretation of that is that he's just inarticulately trying to imply that Donald regularly rapes Melania.
I think that's far too generous.
May very well be. Regardless, grammar.
I mean, these are the same people that, hold on, I'm going to interrupt for a second while we're talking about Melania. I didn't intend to bring this up, but did you see that people were basically slut-shaming her? Where they were putting up, like, pictures she took?
Oh, my God!
And they were like, "Do you want this to be your first lady?" And I wanted to be like, "I'd rather that be my first lady every time. Yes, thank you."
Zing.
Oh, it is so funny how hypocritical they are. It's unbelievable. I thought it's peak hypocrisy of the left that got passed around by some of the most progressive people on my newsfeed.
Yeah, indeed. It's been a strange few days, not just for the hypocrisy, which is, it's so thick that even to name it is to like fucking water it down. You can't even name the hypocrisy. You just gotta step, you gotta like into it like you're mashing grapes for wine. Like you just get right in there with that hypocrisy.
Wait, so you're saying if you mash down their hypocrisy, it becomes wine?
See what I worked this out, Justin, before the show in what was called prep, and then I invented a metaphor, double entendre.
It's good. I like it.
Great. Thank you.
Is that part
Excellent.
Of your two
Moving
minds
on.
About this? Because you were talking about what your two minds are regarding these protests.
No, I'm the second mind is coming.
Okay.
The second mind is coming. I'm still in the first mind.
Okay.
But, you know, the part of the hypocrisy being to name it is to water it down, but let's go there because this is a fucking radio show, is the whole, what was the biggest goddamn controversy from the last debate about Donald Trump? The gall and the audacity and the hubris to say that he would look at the election results to see if he accepted them, and this was somehow a giant attack on democracy. Their candidate didn't win, so they're going to literally break people's shit. Like, I don't like it. No, the second mind on it is what someone points out here in this article, by the way. I think it's Mayor Libby Schaaf from Oakland, says that, quote, "Graffiti and broken windows were left behind by a group of anarchists who continually invade these otherwise peaceful protests with the intention of doing nothing but causing destruction." So the two minds, one, these aren't as big as, second mind being that a lot of these people are protesters who just need an excuse to protest. This excuse was as good as any. There's going to be a bunch of people out there anyway, so why not bring down the evil capitalist system? When you look at a lot of the signs, for instance, it's a lot of that stupid group, the Socialist Alternative, poorly branded, if you ask me, and I'm a marketer. Those signs out there, you have a lot of people saying, you know, crush capitalism, whatever. So smaller than being reported, and protesters who, what they do for a living is break into people's Priuses.
I mean, the thing about these is, I mean, you've already pointed out the hypocrisy, right? The thing I don't get about it is, if Donald Trump was that bad that he shouldn't be president, shouldn't you have been protesting before the election? Questioning the legitimacy before the election?
Yeah, and I think some were. I think part of the thing is, 46% of eligible voters didn't vote? Didn't fucking care. Trump, Clinton, you know, Kanye, whatever.
Right, I was in that percentage, right? On this show, I represent that percentage.
Yeah, and you're underrepresented on the show.
Yeah, how about that? Whoever thought that would happen? I'm underrepresented in the mid-side, ladies and gentlemen. The second thing about these protests is if you go on Craigslist, you can literally find ads to be paid $15 an hour to protest.
Yes. It's a good gig if you can get it. I mean, it's not bad. I'm sure that's all under the table. I'm sure they're not sending you a fucking W-2.
Well, they are to piss you off.
My favorite thing about this article, by the way, about the riots in LA is, of course, the quotes by one Mayor Eric Garcetti, who is just painfully stupid. Why does LA keep electing people with no IQ?
Because the people in LA have no IQ?
He said that Tuesday's election was, of course, painful for many Angelenos and that protests can help heal the community. Heal the community? They're fucking burning the community to the ground.
But this is this whole thing that we have this belief that everyone needs catharsis now. I mean, that's part of when you look at social media. Finally, I think we have to accept and just say that 99% of people just use social media to emotionally vent, to find catharsis. They're not realizing it's this public space that you're actually sharing a thought in, and you should maybe refine your thoughts and yourself before you go out in that public space. It's the same thing with these protests. They're being taken as just, this is how you vent, and this is how you deal with things.
Orwell thing, right? The two-minute hate, where you get all the collectives together, and they just literally scream obscenities and horrible things at the screen of people that upset them.
Oh my God, that's...
This is the protesters' two-minute hate, except that it's lasted 6 days.
6 days of hate. 4 years of hate. Eight years of hate.
Yes. Mayor Garcetti continued, "One of our greatest privileges as Americans is the right to free expression. Thanks, Eric. But walking and throwing objects onto freeways is dangerous for pedestrians." Oh, and drivers.
What, did he say pedestrians?
Yes, indeed, he did.
All the fucking people walking on the highway.
Kicker, this is how hardcore of a statement Mayor Garcetti can make, and it puts a heavy burden on people just trying to make it home to their families or get to work safely. So he's not saying don't go out into the highways. He's saying, guys, it's a heavy burden, and, you know, you might harm the pedestrians, so could you, you know, just do it peacefully? Throw your rocks peacefully. Really?
Can you just...
God, I hate this guy.
Just consider it, guys. I know I'm the mayor, and I know I'm in charge of all of this that happens in this city, but could you just consider what I'm saying, unruly mob? Just take into consideration
Indeed.
What the mayor says, please?
I mean, he's on their side, though. It's like he, you know, there's a reason he isn't drawing a distinction between freedom of speech and what these people are doing. Like, you have the freedom to speak all you want. You don't have the freedom to interfere with other people's lives while conducting your message. And he's purposefully not differentiating between the two because he's on there, you know, because he has a vested interest in eroding the definition of what real free speech entails.
Yeah.
So it's not about him being stupid. Although probably is, but like on top of that, it's all just part of this sham. It's all just part of this leftist, you know, effort to remove the First Amendment.
Completely agree, James. The stupid part is that he can't even walk a lined message. Like his message comes off as some pansy ass nonsense. Politician can walk a line. I mean, look at Hillary Clinton. She didn't say anything for a year and a half. It was tremendous.
She was in the kitchen making Bill sandwiches at the same time.
Masterful to say nothing. Yeah,
exactly. It's from Yes Minister, the bureaucrat who ultimately wants to achieve masterful inactivity. That was Hillary Clinton's attempt at getting elected. I love the messaging of the protesters, though, especially the theme of the show, which is a lot of their signs, the things that are trying to get their message on TV say, "Make America Love Again." And then they whip a Molotov cocktail at a TV discount outlet. what are we loving here other than free TVs?
Fire.
I mean, I guess we love looting.
Yeah.
Is that what we love?
That's an American tradition. Something goes wrong and you loot shit.
Or that's
you
right.
Win, you win a championship and you loot shit. There's a hurricane and you loot shit. There's a presidential election, you loot shit.
That's tradition, Justin.
That's right. You win, you lose, you loot shit. That's how it works. And then, of course, some signs said Wall Street is the enemy. So at least we're back to our roots.
Yeah, gotta remember your roots.
The protests also took their toll on students this week, who at campuses across America sat in a teary circle jerk and decided that it wasn't worth it to live anymore. So a Yale professor, in an attempt to quell the crying, made the students' economic midterm optional. And I want to read a little bit of the...
I didn't realize it was economics. It's even worse.
It's oh, I know. Yes, Econ 115, so basic economics. He says, "Dear Econ 115 students, I am getting many heartfelt notes from students who are in shock over the election results." And I love this quote in parentheses. Although, as I write this, the election has not been called. Hope and
He's
change.
He's still just holding on to hope. Please.
That's
please.
Right. Oh,
it's like halftime of the Super Bowl when the Broncos were destroyed by the Seahawks. I'm getting many distraught letters from notes from students in Denver. From the Denver area. But, you know, it's only halftime. The Broncos could come back. Fuck off.
That's right. That's right. Peyton Manning's a genius. Continuing the quote, "The ones I find most upsetting are James's chair needs WD-40.
Yeah, James, are you just sitting on pure metal?
Yeah, it's part of my Catholic tradition of self-hatred and self, you know. Hold on.
It does sound a little bit like you're trying to make a razor blade smoothie.
Yeah. Not that you hated the audience. Forget yourself.
Okay, so.
So, James, are you good now?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Daniel.
Excellent. Give me the quote. "The ones I find most upsetting are those who fear, rightly or wrongly, for their own families. These students are requesting that the exam be postponed." He says, of course, there's the students who sacrifice for pair, and it wouldn't be that fair, and testing is hard to reschedule. So this is his genius solution. "Therefore, I'm making the exam optional. I will calculate each student's grade, both with and without exam two, placing all of exam two's weight on the final exam when exam two is omitted. I will then take for each student the maximum of the two final grades, and those maximum scores will be used to the final curve. So feel free to make either decision tomorrow or today if you're reading this in the AM." Didn't this professor just save the egos of his precious little snowflakes?
Well, you kind of fucked him without them realizing, though. If you read what he said, the final exam basically counts double if you don't take this one.
Yeah.
So if you want to be a pussy, like, you're going to have to pay the bill later. So this could have actually really been an ultimate troll.
Could have been.
But Justin, that's the future. That doesn't really exist. I mean, come on.
It's true. I don't approve of any of this. When I had the exact opposite mentality when I taught for a very short period of time at Clemson. It was like, if you're not in at the second of the deadline, it's a zero instantly. I don't care. You had a deadline. You've known all the deadlines since the beginning of the year. You're an adult. If you can't prioritize, I don't fucking care. Like, unless literally a meteor wiped out your entire immediate family and you have to go clean up the mess. I just didn't give a shit. And as a result, no one turned their paper in late.
Right. And it's not like this was 9/11, right? Like, planes flew into a building and, like, 3,000 people died. Like, no, like, there were two people running for president. Everyone voted and one person went elected. Good job, America. Things went as planned.
Things that could have happened, happened.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, no, I'm so upset because I watched the Super Bowl and one team won and one team lost.
Yes. Indeed.
I don't know. I was pretty upset. I mean, it's completely different reasons, but I was pretty upset for what this means about the culture. But as I look back, it's like, okay, well, I think Trump may in fact be better as a president than Hillary. Maybe he may do better things, but what this means for the culture was very disturbing for me to witness.
I get that. I don't think it could be so bad that you need to take a day off school or work. And then the only other thing I would say, James, I don't know. I think we were just also numb to the fact that Hillary Clinton was already going to win. Actually sat down and thought what a Hillary Clinton victory meant for the culture as well. That's pretty fucking depressing too. I don't think there was an outcome here unless in a shock result, none of the above has won. And we're going to take both these people and put them in prison.
Somehow, every presidential candidate has been assassinated, and Harambe is now president of the United States.
Yes, we have elected a dead gorilla. Excellent.
No, I keep hitting this football metaphor, but it's for a reason.
Tom Brady.
not this time. When you go into the Super Bowl, you have 2 weeks to prepare. You damn well better prepare for what happens if your team wins and what happens if your team loses. And I say this because I speak from experience. When the Patriots were 18-0, nobody expected we were going to lose. I didn't expect we would lose. I was like, yeah, we got this. And then we lost, and it was like someone died in my apartment.
That was the first night I ever hang out with Justin, everyone.
And first time you ever watched the Patriots with me.
That's right. We all just slowly walked out of your apartment as you stood there in shock.
And that's the point. That's not how it should be. That's not a healthy way to look at things. And it's the same thing here. Like, I mean, okay, so I didn't vote, and you know that I hated both these fucking people. So I was already prepared months ago that either way it was going to be a shitty ending. The only thing that changed for me was as I was watching, I was laughing hysterically because nobody gave Trump a chance, and fucking even the people in the gym where I was watching it for a while were bargaining. Oh man, if Trump just loses Florida, it's all going to be okay. Yeah, but he's up by 130,000 votes in Florida. Oh shit! Like,
you're bargaining with reality. To clarify, bargaining with reality.
Right, and the reason I didn't get upset about any of this is because I had already accepted the reality of the situation, and I think that's a lot of what happened here is SNL actually had a very funny sketch about this. You know, there was the underlying theme of America's racist, but it's Dave Chappelle sitting on a couch with a bunch of people watching the election. All the other people are white, and they keep saying these bargaining things. And they cut back to Dave Chappelle, who just says things that just completely makes them look ridiculous. Because Dave Chappelle has accepted the reality. And it's funny because of that interplay. Now, it's kind of fucked up because the reason he's accepted is because he's black and he thinks America is racist. But that's what's going on. It's just people didn't... It's the same mistake the Republicans made in the primaries. Nobody took Trump seriously as a candidate.
Yeah, did you know that if... and in fact, one guy did. He put... did you know that if you had taken Trump in the betting market during the primaries, when he entered the race, you got 2,500-1 odds.
What?
Well, that's what I was actually thinking about. Why not when the entire presidential field is released for the primaries, why not just bet on each person? Put like $20 on each person.
Yeah, there's a guy who put $10 on Trump.
Yeah, and how much did he win?
$25,000.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why not just do that?
Yeah.
Every presidential, I might do that from now on. I mean, it's the best lottery possible, right?
Yeah, there you go. Although this is a pretty... okay, never mind. I was about to prognosticate, and I've decided that that's as effective as mass psychologizing, so fuck it.
No one could have predicted this. This is...
While we're opening that door... Are you ready for a Justin prediction, a JML prediction for the next election?
That there'll be another door behind that door?
No, that's good, though. Kanye will be a serious candidate in 2020. That's what this has opened the door to.
You heard it here first, folks. Get on that predict it market. So let's talk a little bit about how Trump did this, because no one really could have predicted it. Except that one crazy professor. Have you seen this guy who's apparently picked every election correctly, like within 1% or something stupid. And he also came out today and said that he now predicts Trump will be impeached. So anyway, there's that guy. He predicted it. But one of the reasons that is the theory is going around is there's this sort of silent Trump majority, or people have been saying it was a Bradley effect, which is basically this thing where when asked in public or when asked by a pollster, no one would admit to wanting to vote for Trump. But then when they got in the polling booth, they're like, oh, I'm fucking voting for Trump. So the Washington Post has an op-ed by Asra Q. Nomani, and it's titled, I'm a Muslim, a woman, and an immigrant. I voted for Trump. So Stoner. The article basically talks about why she voted for Trump, even though she previously voted for Obama. And she goes into very good, sort of well thought out reasons. I thought we'd highlight a few of them here. She says, I am a single mother who can't afford health insurance under Obamacare. The president's mortgage loan modification program, Hope Now, didn't help me at all. Tuesday, I drove into Virginia from my hometown of Morgantown, West Virginia, where I see rural America and ordinary Americans like me still struggling to make ends meet after 8 years of the Obama administration. And then this is the one that actually gets very nuanced. Remember, she is a Muslim woman. Finally, as a liberal Muslim who has experienced firsthand Islamic extremism in the world, I've been opposed to the decision by President Obama and the Democratic Party to tap dance around the Islam in Islamic State. Not in the article to really take Obama and the Democrats to task about their refusal to sort of honestly deal with the problem of Islam. She talks about, and specifically she talks about the multi-million-dollar donations to the Clinton Foundation from Qatar and Saudi Arabia that basically killed her support for Clinton. She says, yes, I want equal pay. No, I reject Trump's locker room banter, the idea of a wall between the United States and Mexico and his plan to, quote unquote, ban Muslims. But I trust the United States and don't buy the political hyperbole, agenda-driven identity politics of its own that demonize Trump and his supporters. It's kind of crazy, isn't it? That this might have been indicative of at least some electorate.
I mean, I think that's because, possibly the most rational position you can take on Trump.
Because, by the way, like the media keeps consistently talking about how this was white lash and how this was the last stand of the white whatever. 9% of the Latino vote. That's not 2 or 9%. That's 29% of the Latino vote. More than Romney won, by the way.
Wow.
And he won 8% of the black vote, which is more than a Republican has won in a long time. That's a smaller, much more smaller percentage, obviously, but
it was not. Those are 8%.
Which is larger? It's 8%. He won 8% of the black vote, which is, I mean, I think Romney won 2. So this is not, it wasn't a completely quote unquote white movement that elected Trump. In fact, it wouldn't have been enough if it was just a white movement. He would have lost in a landslide.
How do you even have the last throes of a white movement anyway? Like, are they telling us there's going to be a biological weapon that only targets white people? Like, I don't understand that.
Well, it never made any sense anyway. Their idea was basically like, oh, because their stupid reasoning sort of contradicts itself, which is that white people are becoming a smaller part of the American population and a smaller part of the electorate, but this was their last stand, and they all voted in lockstep. And it's like, that's nowhere near the truth. Also, Trump won white women. I wanted to point that out. No one's talking about that either.
Well, wasn't I the one who told you that?
Yes, indeed. And I didn't even believe you. I didn't think that was possible.
I gave up. We were on the phone, and you were like, that's not true. And I was like trying to Google it, and I was like, I don't fucking want to look for this.
Yeah, I think he won like 53 or 54% of the white female vote.
Yeah.
So I guess they're all misogynists.
Nobody believes the grab her by the pussy thing. Like, nobody believed that. That's the thing.
But what's hilarious is that it was completely credible, I think. Like, watching that video, it's like, yeah. Like, based on the context, yeah. I mean, I don't think he was actually grabbing anyone by the pussy, but I don't think he was, based on the context, it didn't sound like he was lying when he said that he just walks right up to women and kisses them. But yeah. We're at a point now that the left, I think this is this election and this grabber by the pussy stuff not working. Like, I think this is a sign that the left has cried wolf too many times that the American people don't buy this bullshit anymore, which surprises me, actually. I think eventually they will win, but for now we're seeing a remission of this cancer that is social justice.
Well, because Trump and people like Milo have provided the alternative voice, and it's exposed them on a level they've never been exposed at before. I mean, you can probably draw a direct line between Milo being banned from Twitter because of the hate against Leslie Jones for a shitty movie and the Ghostbusters movie and the hype around that to Donald Trump being president. And what I mean about that is, and you know, we can even tie this to Marvel and DC, and we will in the romantic section in a second, in the art section in a second, but we were fed this narrative for months that, oh, this is a Ghostbusters reboot and anyone who hates it hates women, and you know, you have to go see this movie. This is a step forward for feminism. And I saw the movie, and it was fucking awful. And isn't that literally the same narrative they told for Hillary Clinton's campaign? Oh, well, Hillary's good for America. You need to vote for her. She's great. And if you don't vote for her, you hate women. So after everyone saw Ghostbusters Exposed, it's funny to watch the media thrash and thrall and not understand why their narrative isn't working on election night. I mean, how long did it take them to call states that should have been called way before that? I mean, I'm on Google, which Daniel tells me. What, James?
That was a pleasure to watch, I might add. Oh, my. Anderson Cooper's just like, oh, well, okay. Well, it appears as though just they didn't know what to say.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm on Google, which Daniel tells me was from the Associated Press, and they're calling states that haven't been called, and I'm watching the TV and they're looking at Michigan and they're like, well, Wayne County hasn't reported yet. There are usually a lot of absentee ballots here. So even though 99% of this state has been called and it's Republican, we're not going to call this state yet because these absentee ballots are going to save us, basically.
Yeah, so to be fair, Michigan was uncalled later by the AP and has still, in fact, not been called, believe it or not. And neither is New Hampshire, officially. But it wouldn't matter, Trump still wins, even if Hillary wins them both. But certainly, like, fucking Florida, which had been called by the AP and every other news outlet at, like, I don't know, 9:30 or something, CNN didn't call until 11 o'clock. CNN was down in the fucking map going, now there's this county. This county has 97.5% reported, but Hillary Clinton's winning big here, so she could make a huge comeback. John King didn't know what the fuck to do.
And they
was panicking.
AP called Pennsylvania before everyone else, too.
Oh, way before everyone else, yeah. Absolutely. And you know, the AP was getting their numbers directly from the states. That was the thing. That's why Google used AP. So...
wow.
It was
actually,
it was
doing
fun
the job
to watch.
Correctly works.
It was a fun night to watch. There is a certain bit of schadenfreude that I enjoy about watching the left lose their mind. I did want to talk briefly, we don't have to get into this, but do you think that there, other than Donald Trump's policy stuff, which we're going to get into in a moment, do you think there are other positive takeaways from this election? Because I think there are, even though Donald Trump's a madman.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think the media, what we just talked about, the media's power has been undermined severely, significantly.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yes.
Also, I think social media has been exposed for what it is.
Maybe. The echo chamber part, certainly.
Yes, that's what
but,
I mean.
But Donald Trump built a coalition by basically talking into a Twitter and broadcasting it out to the world. Sad. Period.
Well, I mean, that started with Obama. We said that. Obama was the first celebrity president. He used social media in that way. Obama, I mean, he can get mad all he wants, but he set up Trump.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he set up Trump, not just on the social media angle, but he sets up Trump and he sets up the huge backlash to what James was talking about, to the social justice culture, because everyone who opposed Obama was apparently a racist. And then Obama got in office and was just another politician.
Yeah.
He was not the hope and change that was promised for 8 years. And it turns out people were turning around going, maybe they had a point. Maybe they weren't racist. Maybe they did know this guy was going to fucking suck. So
And on that note, another good thing is if you go back to, what was it, 04? Or was it 08? That 8 million fewer people, I used it properly, voted in this election than voted in that election. So I think there were more people like me who were conscientious objectors than people realized. I think people were saying, hey, the system's fucked. It's broken. I don't want to participate in this.
I like that thought. I want to put on the ballot in every state a none of these fucking people bubble. Because I want to be able to quantify that.
Yeah.
I want you, Justin, to go to the polls and fill out the bubble that says none of these fuckers.
I would have wasted my time. Part of the reason I didn't vote is I didn't want to fucking waste my time standing in line behind 80 illegal immigrants who just have to steal someone's address, don't even have to show an ID, just go, oh yeah, I live on that street in that city.
The estimate that I'm seeing going around, I can't quote a source on this, is that they're estimating that just under 3 million illegal immigrants casted votes.
Yeah. So I would have wasted my time standing in line behind those people just to say, no, fuck you, the system's broken, and bubble that shit in.
That would be an awesome thing to put on the ballot, by the way.
Quantification of that is that 15,000 votes, write-in votes, were cast for the our Lord and Savior Harambe the gorilla.
That's true. One of the more successful, Jill Stein barely beat him out. Yeah. So
that's right, Green Party. A dead gorilla is more in line with the American public than you are.
Yeah, that's to be. I mean, factually, that's not correct, but it's a funny joke because who the fuck is Jill Stein? So. Another good thing, by the way, is I think two discussions can be killed. National level, maybe not on the smaller level. The first discussion that can be killed is money and politics. We can stop talking about fucking money and politics.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton outspent Donald Trump more than 2-1 and got her ass handed to her. Fuck up, Democrats, about money and politics. It means nothing. The American public spends more annually on Halloween candy than we spend on the entire election cycle.
And shut the fuck up, Halloween money and politics. Than you do the election cycle.
Yes, indeed. And then the second one, which is more on the Republican side, what did we hear from Donald Trump for 2 months? The election's rigged, folks. It's rigged. It's nothing but rigged. He won. Is it still rigged? Or can we move on from that? What kind of idiocy is that? Maybe that's the one that maybe on the local level needs some discussion still. Obviously, Hillary Clinton had a large part to play in pushing out Bernie Sanders. But that wasn't rigged in the sense that, like, they didn't take boxes of Bernie Sanders votes and put them on a bonfire. They just sort of stacked the deck against him and made it harder for him to participate. But
yeah, and that's what he was doing. He was like, just doing that to label Hillary, basically, and label the media. He was doing that to rise up the us versus them rhetoric.
Yeah, but a few days before the election and on election day, you saw all the stories flooding out from his campaign and from his supporters about like election fraud in Philadelphia, election fraud in Michigan, election fraud, election fraud. They meant on some level that it was actually rigged.
They were also preparing that conversation now. Yeah, they were also preparing at that point for a loss.
Donald Trump's campaign manager and advisors told him that morning that there was no reason for him to write a victory speech because there was no way he could win. That's how fucked everyone thought he was on the day of the election.
Well, and Hillary Clinton had her fireworks display set up.
Yes. Did you know that she had... I learned this today. Maybe I'm just dumb. She had her election day party hotel that had a glass ceiling in it.
Yeah, you hadn't heard of that?
I thought that was a joke.
Nope.
I thought that was like a ha 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 hilarious. Yes, Hillary has the glass ceiling. No, she actually did.
Well, was she planning on breaking it at the end of the night?
Confetti, I guess. Well, glass
just
shards.
Raining broken glass down upon all your supporters. Never mind. Sounds like something Hillary would do. And she's just laughing the whole time as her supporters are bleeding.
I'll get you, my pretties. Yes. So, what is Trump actually going to do? What people say he's going to do, kill all the gays, take away women's rights, punish evil for having the wrong religion. It's almost as if he's a Muslim. I heard that's not my joke. That's not my joke.
I saw, yeah.
That's not my joke, but I loved it so much. So what is he actually going to do? So Trump released his 100-day action plan to make America great again. It's a contract between himself and the American voters, he says, and begins with restoring honesty, accountability, and change to Washington. So you want to hear a few of the things he's going to do? First, this is literally the very first thing on his list. We're not going to read all of them, but this is the very first thing on his list. This is a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on all members of Congress. We're not going to do this for each one, but what do you think about that as the number one priority?
Take it further.
Take it further.
So one of the things I have learned is one of the things that I've been saying is actually much more important than I realized it. So I have been going on and on about how it used to be that people who worked in the government and worked in Congress, it wasn't a full-time job for them. And I finally did research. And do you know when it became a full-time job for them?
I do, because by doing research, you meant I made Dan Google it.
Yeah. No, I was trying to Google it, and then it wasn't working because Google hates me. And then you got it to work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like Bill Burr when he tries to Google things. I'm like, how long have those assholes been getting a full-time salary for doing jack shit? And I get, like, the Cleveland Browns homepage.
Yes. Okay, so what did you learn?
1970 is when we started making this a full-time job for these people. They used to get, like, in the beginning, daily stipends.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a yearly salary thing because they assumed you would go back and have a job.
And you had to have one until 1970, and we gave them a full-time job at that point. So term limits are a good start because, you know, people aren't like, oh, fuck, I'm going to get this job and I'm never going to have to work again for the rest of my life. That's a start. But you also need to, if you want to, you know, lower the national deficit and get us out of debt, stop paying these fucking assholes so much money. Make them earn some of their shit. Because the other thing is, if they have to actually earn shit and be in touch with reality, well, maybe they'll fucking look at what the rest of us deal with. As for now, they're just like, oh, yeah, why can't everyone be like us and just take money and not do anything?
Yeah, I, just for the record, sold on term limits. Maybe that sounds insane, but I think it could do more harm than good. I don't really have time to flesh that out. Plus, I'm not convinced myself that I'm not convinced. So if anyone has good arguments for and against term limits, happy to hear them over at the Midside.
I already gave mine. If you disagree with me, you're an idiot.
There we go. Perfect. So here's the reason I don't think this sounds good, the first one. It's not because of the term limit thing necessarily, even though, like I said, but it's proposed a constitutional amendment. You want me to accomplish this for you, Donald Trump? Because I can do it right now. I hereby propose a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on all members of Congress. Done. Checked off the list. Boom. Look at that fucking change. What Donald Trump can do, because the president can't do anything with constitutional amendments. So, all right. So that's why that's nonsense. But some of the others are interesting. We'll run through them. A hiring freeze on federal employees. Third, a requirement that every new federal regulation, two existing regulations must die.
He said, oh, my God. Love, 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 love.
That's tremendous. Fourth, a five-year ban on White House and congressional officials becoming lobbyists after they leave government. Fine with that. Fifth, a lifetime ban on White House officials becoming lobbyists on behalf of foreign governments. Cool. Sixth, a complete ban on foreign lobbyists raising money for American elections. Interesting. Not sure how I feel about that, but fine. Then he goes into some other things like, I never hear the wording of these. I will announce my intention to renegotiate NAFTA or withdraw from the deal under Article 2205. I can accomplish that for him because I can announce his intention. Excellent. Draw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's already dead. Good job there, Trump, i.e. fuck you. I will direct my Secretary of Treasury to label China a currency manipulator. Great. Trade war with China. Just what my iPhone needed. It will direct the Secretary of Commerce and U.S. Trade Representative to identify all foreign trading abuses and unfairly impact American workers and direct them to use every tool under American international law to end those abuses immediately. Trade war, trade war, trade war, trade war. He continues, cancel billions of payments to UN climate change programs. Woo! Cancel every unconstitutional executive action, memorandum, and order issued by President Obama. If he just did that, I would get on the Trump train, I think. I think I would get on the Trump train. If he just day one said all unconstitutional executive actions, and he had a list of them, issued by President Obama are hereby null and void. That would be fucking awesome. Cancel funding to sanctuary cities. Start picking a judge replacement for Scalia. I've seen his list. It's tremendous. Begin removing the more than 2 million illegal immigrants. Boo. Suspend immigration from terror-prone regions. What does that mean? And then he has a list of other things that we're not going to get into. So, any other thoughts on those, gentlemen? Things that stand out as good, bad, indifferent?
I think materially this brings us further away from collapse. If we had gotten Hillary, I don't see it as a change for the culture, but it would have, you know, brought us more Obama-style policies, and it would have drawn us closer to economic collapse. If all of this gets done minus the trade deals, then it brings us further away from total economic collapse, which is a good thing. The problem is that it starts making the anti-intellectualism of Trump look like, you know, actual effective conservatism. It's like what people once sort of idealized as Reagan conservatism, they're now going to start thinking of as Trump conservatism, which is devastating to the culture in the long run. But, you know, does this save us? Does this make us more free in the short run, as long as the trade deals don't go through, you know, the cancellation of NAFTA? Yeah, I think it could be a really good thing. And there's reason to think that a lot of these good things are going to happen without the bad things, especially NAFTA. NAFTA is going to be really hard for him to get through Congress because a lot of the Republicans are not even on board with getting rid of it. So he may have to sacrifice that part of his agenda in order to get support for the rest of it. And the rest of it, I mean, getting rid of Obamacare, allowing, you know, insurance companies to sell across state lines. God, that would be just amazing. That would be just fabulous. I don't like what this means culturally, though. Like, and that's what I think is even. I don't even see us talking about his policies as the main thing. I see the what this means about the culture is the main.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't think the trade stuff, Daniel, we talked about this. I don't think the trade stuff can be underemphasized. I mean, if he goes into a trade war with China, how long has China been propping up our economy by giving us cheap goods?
It would really be a disaster of untold proportions, like talking Great Depression, if not worse, disaster for our economy.
Yeah, and he could do all the other stuff, and if he still did the China thing, we'd still be fucked.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, I think he's going to get the trade stuff or the immigration stuff. I think the Congress will give him one of those. So I hope...
He's more likely to get it?
I think he's more likely to get the immigration stuff. I think that's bad. Bad than the trade stuff, but it's probably because I'm already here.
There's a silver lining to the immigration stuff, I think, even though it's a bad policy and I'm against it all day long. Like, ideologically, I will be fighting against it and denouncing Trump for it and all of that. But practically speaking, it it cancels out this dirty trick the Democrats are trying to play by just expanding their voter base through illegal immigration, which I think, you know, it's fine that they come across the border and everything, but like when it comes to the battle itself, when it comes to how much time does this country have left until we're destroyed, it sets the clock back a little bit.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing I still worry about with Trump from a political perspective, which is that I don't know if he's ever held a consistent position in his life.
Yeah.
He may release this 100-point plan or whatever, 100-day plan, and then get in there and be like, eh, fuck it.
Yeah, that's still totally a possibility.
Yeah, so whatever. I don't know. Trump sucks. America sucks. We need a better culture. Thank you, James.
I mean, that is the farce of it all, isn't it? Is we have no idea what's going to happen now with Donald Trump.
We still don't.
That's right. And anyone who says, I know what's going to happen, is a fucking liar.
Yeah. So why don't we talk about the culture that we're hoping improves? You guys want to do that?
Woo.
All right. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Let's start out with a few reviews here really quickly. James, I know you wanted to follow up on what I said about Doctor Strange last week.
Yeah, so I saw Doctor Strange a couple nights ago. Really awesome. I realize that there's a lot of problems with it. The plot, kind of a classic Marvel plot, only it kind of made sense. There were small holes, but not the usual complete contempt for the mind that Marvel usually projects with its plots. I just really, what made the movie for me, I loved the character of Doctor Strange. I'd never read it in the comics. I never seen any cartoons of Doctor Strange. Just loved this character. Loved Benedict Cumberbatch's performance. He's just such a, I love how intelligent he is and how confident he is. And another thing I liked is that they didn't pull a Thor and take all of that away from him at the end. Like, I was so afraid that they were going to sort of say, like, oh, you know, okay, spoiler alert, by the way. I was so afraid that they were going to say, like, oh, well, he fucked around with the time continuum and he really shouldn't have done that. He should not have been so arrogant. Oh, my God. So, you know, no, they, basically, it's like, no, this guy's a guy who's willing to break the rules. He's willing to push the boundaries and do things just out of his own creativity and his own desire to achieve crazy cool things, to always push the envelope. And because of his willingness to do that, he's able to beat Mugatu. not the villain from, you know,
Zoolander?
Oh, I thought that was a joke you were making.
No, what was his name?
Dormammu.
Dormammu, I'm here to bargain. I love that.
That crossover needs to be made now, though. Mugatu, I came to bargain. Mugatu, I came to bargain.
That's right.
It was, you know, it's childish, it's simple, you know, it's the hero formula, the origin story formula. But, you know, I really liked it. I really liked Doctor Strange. And yes, there was altruism in it, but it was all just lip service. None of it actually played into the plot. I'll ask you this. Did Doctor Strange beat Dormammu by being an altruist, setting aside his ego? No, he embraced his ego. No, he didn't. What the fuck?
He consigned himself to an eternity of suffering in order to hoodwink the villain into the evil force into going away. If he wasn't willing to suffer for eternity, then the world was fucked.
You know, yeah, you know what? There's a mixed message. On one hand, he kind of says in this noble sort of way, like, oh, I'm willing to just sit here and keep dying over and over again, as long as you don't harm the world. Like, that's sort of like, oh, I'm so noble. But then on the other hand, look at his face as he dies over and over again. He's enjoying the fact that he has this, you know, cosmic tyrant by the balls, and he just, he's enjoying it. And so, yes, you're right, Justin, but I chose to just focus on the egoistic aspect that was inherent in it rather than the forced altruistic lip service that they shoehorned in.
Okay, I think what you're reading into it is Benedict Cumberbatch. And this is that's just him.
Yes. But he is great. When I saw that he was going to be Doctor Strange, I was like, that raised my eyebrow. I'm like, I'm definitely going to see this. It sounds good. It sounds like it could be good. And it really was. I really did enjoy it.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that was one of the things I said. Cumberbatch is awesome. And Mads Mikkelsen brings a similar gravitas to his character.
I didn't.
Robot James agrees. Excellent.
I said Cumberbatch is awesome, and Mads Mikkelsen likewise brings a similar gravitas to his character.
Who was that?
Fucking Dilettante.
He was the guy with eczema. Yeah. Eczema on his eyes.
The villain.
Oh yeah, Hannibal.
Yes.
He was fun. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No. All right. Let's move on to a couple other reviews. I watched the sitcom The Great Indoors. This is the one starring Joel McHale and McLovin, and it's about Joel McHale has been a field reporter for an outdoor magazine that is now transitioning into being an outdoor website. So there's the millennial team that works on the website, and then Joel McHale has basically been brought in to inspire and manage them. And it's supposed to be about the conflict and comedy and drama is supposed to come from, you know, the tension between those two generations. Episode 1 was decent. Episode 2 was funny. Episode 3 was complete shit. This is what you would expect from CBS. It's a pretty paint-by-the-numbers sitcom. And it only really excels when McHale is able to put his own spin on things. I'm pretty sure a few of the lines were ad-libbed by him. Those were very funny in that sense. And when McLovin actually gets comfortable and the two develop chemistry, it's pretty good. I'm looking forward to seeing if McLovin and Joel McHale can develop that chemistry going forward.
Mm.
All right. Now let's talk about Trolls. Trolls is a review that was requested. I put up on the Facebook page, what movie would you Midsiders like me to review? And Midsider Alfred responded and said he wanted to see what I thought of Trolls because he saw it with his two children. So, Midsiders, if you want me to review other movies besides animated movies based on toys, make sure you reply when I post things on Facebook.
And we don't. Excellent.
Apparently this is our key demographic. So we're going to do the same thing we did last time, Daniel, because it worked so well. So what questions do you have about this movie so I don't continue monologuing?
In the pantheon of, because this was DreamWorks, right?
I don't fucking know.
So in the pantheon of DreamWorks films, which you have like How to Train Your Dragon and Shrek and the Guardians.
Rise of the Guardians.
Thank you. Guardians of Gahool always throws me off. where is Trolls? Is this among the pantheon of great DreamWorks films, or is this something more light and fluffy? Because I thought it could go either way from the trailer.
It aspired to be among the pantheon, but I think it falls short. I would put it more equivalent to, like, I don't know, somewhere in like Shrek 3 or 4 territory.
Gotcha. How do they sustain a movie based on a toy that has no sort of history or plot to it, except that it eventually got turned into a gummy creature?
So the way they did it is they created another set of creatures. They're basically giants. They're basically, have you ever seen The Big Friendly Giant, where you have the evil giants that eat children?
Aren't there bigger? Oh, wait. So yes, there's a big friendly giant and there are giants who bully that giant, right?
Right, and eat the children.
Yeah. Gotcha.
That's what the villains are in this movie. They are giants who eat the trolls because trolls are the happiest creatures ever. So the trolls are basically a version of the Smurfs. And they're the happiest creatures ever. And the only way this other... I can't remember the name of this other species right now. It starts with a B. I'm thinking Bergeron, but they're not named after Harrison Bergeron, so that's wrong.
Are they the? Don't tell me they're like Bromdingnags or something.
No.
Okay.
They reminded me of, though, the movie The Box Trolls. They reminded me of the villains in the movie The Box Trolls. So I just wanted to watch The Box Trolls again the whole time. So, they can only feel happiness when they eat a troll. So they have something called Trollstice, where when they all eat trolls is on Trollstice.
Okay. What's the point of this movie?
The point of this movie is the trolls leave that area and they go and hide. But then the exiled chef who, do you mean plot-wise or theme-wise? I'm going to go with plot first. The exiled chef, who, because she destroyed Solstice, when it was going to be the prince's first solstice or trollstice, so he would be able to feel happiness for the first time. She didn't have any trolls. She finds where the trolls have gone to and kidnapped some of them. So Princess Poppy has to go and try and rescue them, and she brings along...
Wait, the princess is a Mexican?
It's a very poorly named Mexican, yes. I thought, the whole time, I thought it was David Ortiz in drag. And I was very confused.
Yes.
It actually would have been much more entertaining if it was David Ortiz in drag. But no, she brings along Justin Timberlake's character, who is the troll that isn't happy. And they have to rescue all the other trolls so they're not eaten.
Does he do it by putting his hair in a box?
That's funny, but no. So do you want to know how this is resolved?
I guess. You didn't sell it. Not that there was much of a movie to sell. But...
Right. So there are two basic climaxes to this movie. The first climax is when Justin Timberlake's troll learns to be happy again. So what happens is they all end up getting captured. All the trolls get captured at the end of the movie. And they get captured and they're going to be cooked on the next Trollstice. And they all lose their color because Princess Poppy has decided it's her fault they all get captured. But in an Indiana Jones-like move, she had nothing to do with it. One of the trolls who was originally captured sells out all the other trolls and says where the troll new troll village is, and they all get captured and put in the pot. And Princess Poppy, in her narcissistic female way, is like, man, this is all my fault. Bitch, you didn't do anything. That dude sold everyone out. Russell Brand troll sold everyone out. So then, in the all equally feminist female way of doing things, Justin Timberlake's troll has to start singing to her and getting his colors back and learning how to be happy on his own in order to make her happy again. Even though the point of the movie over and over again is sometimes you just need a little bit of help becoming happy and finding your happiness again. You know the help he received? He explained his story at one point as to why he wasn't happy anymore. Nobody taught him how to be happy. It was just everyone fucking around him was unhappy and he had to start singing about your true colors, and then suddenly everyone was happy again and he was happy again and got their colors back. And that's the first climax.
So you would say that the moral of this story is sometimes you need other people to help you be happy, but also not.
Yeah, it's there seems to be a second-handed emotionalism in here, but it's very confused. And it's very sort of, hey, I'm Justin Timberlake, and I'm happy again. Now everyone else be happy. And we see this play out in the main plot. The reason the trolls are eventually able to be freed and the giants don't eat them anymore is the prince learns how to be happy without eating trolls because he falls in love with the scullery maid. Or scour, however the fuck you say it. Scullery maid? I don't know the fucking word. And by them falling in love, they realize, hey, we can be happy without eating trolls.
So overall, this sounds terrible so far.
I mean, it looked good. And Anna Kendrick can sing, and Justin Timberlake can sing, and the songs were interesting. Like, to show how depressed the giant town was, they used that gorilla song. You know, this, not the Harambe one, the one about the group, the gorillas. Is coming
what?
On, is coming on.
Yeah, yeah. Clint Eastwood by
yes.
The gorillas.
There you go. Thank you. Got somebody
is
got that
English? Reference. What are you saying? Okay.
So I would not recommend this movie.
Last question. Maybe you're not the expert to ask on this. Do you think if someone has kids, their kids would enjoy this movie?
Yes.
Shiny and bright?
Yes. The trolls are very shiny and bright. And it's like, shiny and bright wins over not shiny and bright, like Smurfs and Care Bears. It's like they tried to add philosophical weight to Smurfs and Care Bears, but then they were like, wait, no, we don't need it. And they didn't know how to execute.
Wait! No.
It felt like they wrote the two climactic scenes first and worked backwards from it and had no idea how to do it.
That sounds like most movies nowadays.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
So you want to talk some shit about some movies preemptively then?
Yeah.
All right, it's time for Trailer Takedown. I'm going to play the sound effect.
Trailer Takedown.
First trailer. You just gotta fucking hate on that guy's speaking every time, don't you, Daniel?
I not hate on it, just love me more. Yes, excellent.
Fair enough. All right, well, because of you, we have this first trailer, which is the longest fucking movie title ever. Valerian in the City of a Thousand Planets. Now, I'm gonna go first, because my reaction to
Wong
this...
Thanks for everything, Julia Newmar. It's probably longer.
Really? But... I don't know. Let's compare.
Also, isn't Doctor Strangelove or How I Learned to Love and How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb?
Okay.
Anyway.
Fine. Fuck off, all right? It's a long movie title. That's the point. Fucking ruined my joke. I'm going to go first, though, with this trailer and about hugging it or tackling it, because I think my experience is hilarious. So I'm watching this trailer... And I'm looking at it, I'm going, this really reminds me of The Fifth Element, and I don't know why. I can't put my finger on it. From the director of The Fifth Element. Oh, that's why. Immediate hug. Sci-fi movie by the director of The Fifth Element. I'm in.
Yeah, this looks like it could have been a sequel to or a prequel to The Fifth Element in its style. Apparently it's based off a comic book that I've never heard of, or I'm sorry, a graphic novel that I've never heard of. But yeah, count me fucking in. Hug. In like Flynn. I'll go see it twice. I probably won't, but I'm excited. I like this kind of sci-fi where it's like a complex world sci-fi, but it's not Game of Thrones complex. It's just, look at this massive universe and there's a lot going on and we're not going to sit here and explain everything about it because we're just going to let you experience it as if you were a traveler in this universe.
James?
I'm kind of the opposite. I want to understand the universe fully if it's given. I don't like what would be an example of this? Like, I don't know if you guys remember this, but in the Chronicles of Riddick, they make reference to this giant sci-fi world, but you get to see just the lower left corner of that world, and that's it. And they make reference to the rest of it, but it's like you just don't get to see it. In addition, I hated The Fifth Element. What is wrong with you guys? Most of the people in The Fifth Element spoke the way I'm speaking right now, and they can't string sentences together, and they just keep hesitating. And then nothing makes sense, and the purpose of the movie is just incredible. Or the theme of the movie, as far as I could see, it was just incredibly shallow. Just like, oh, why do people keep killing each other? That's so bad. And then they go to the pyramids or something.
Leave the Dallas matters. Multipass.
That was kind of funny, but all the action is meaningless. It's like shoot these people. I don't even know. It came off to me as what Ayn Rand called bootleg romanticism. It's just like it has all these elements of romanticism, but none of it is serious at all. And so it just comes off to me as pointless. And
it's
kind of
It's pop. It's there's a word for it. Spaghetti
awesome
Western
is the word for it.
Yeah, well, James, you have never been so wrong.
It's Die Hard in space. What more do you want?
Coming from the guy.
No, it's not. Die Hard at a point.
So the Fifth Element. The Fifth Element is love. That's the point of the movie.
Yeah, but only in the most shallow sense.
Yeah.
Of the word.
I don't think there's anything shallow about loving Mila Jovovich. So, no, really wrong. But I could watch The Fifth Element any day of the week. If you said, let's put on a movie, let's all agree that it has to be in a movie that will instantly make us happy and want to watch all the way through, I don't think there's a better choice than The Fifth Element.
Yeah, I mean, it's not funny. Like Snyder romanticism, but it's not bootleg romanticism either. It's, you know, it's good romanticism that's, you know, not the deepest intellectually. There's a room for
movies
like that.
I will take bootleg romanticism as a description of that film. It's entertaining. It's just sort of light, and it's poppy. It's, I don't know. I like it. I like it. It's like a visualization of a dime store action novel.
Yeah. The production of it, the visualization of everything. Come on.
Groundbreaking as well.
All right. So now that James has been shouted down, let's move on to the next trailer.
2 minute hate on James.
All right, James, you can go first on this one. This is finally we have the first trailer for the Beauty and the Beast live action movie from Disney starring Emma Watson. James, hug or tackle?
Imitation of the Beast?
Because it's something she may like. Actually, no, she'll hate this. So, no. She really likes, by the way. So did I. But, you know, this has nothing to do with that. The only thing that this trailer made me think is that isn't Emma Watson perpetuating the patriarchy by being a princess, one of Disney's classic princesses?
That's true. Emma Watson is big on the patriarchy.
They make a big deal in this movie out of giving Belle a job at the beginning where she's an inventor like her father is, which isn't in the original movie. Oh,
that's cute of them.
Isn't that adorable? They let her have a job.
Daniel,
that's so sweet.
Nice.
You know what they also gave her for this movie, I'm sure, is an enormous paycheck so she could shut her fucking mouth about the patriarchy.
Yeah.
Complete tackle. No fucking interest in this whatsoever. And this is after I sang high praises of the Jungle Book live action remake. But this just has no appeal to me. I barely liked the original. I know that's heresy, but I mean, it's fine. It's a fine movie. I would let my kids watch it or whatever, but it's just not entertaining to me. It's not the first movie I would go to for a fun story and good music. That would be Aladdin.
Thank you.
But
you're safe. You can stay in the midside.
But The Lion King is a second runner-up. But yeah, I just, no. No. No thanks. Pass. The teacups look dumb.
I will wait till this is on home video, and then I will hug it out of curiosity. I will say this, though. You say the teacups. I think the Beast's face looks awful. It's like, it looks like it's CG for some reason.
It does look a little CGE, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, yeah. Why wouldn't you put the guy in, like, full, like, makeup every day?
Eh, too much money.
Eh. Can't have the actors suffer.
They only have trillions of dollars.
All right, so let's do the last trailer, and Daniel, you can go first here. It's Live by Night. It's Ben Affleck's next vehicle. We may have talked about this already, but this is the final trailer for it. It's a mobster movie. Hug or tackle?
Tentative hug based mostly on the directing, which looks stunning.
Yeah, it's almost like he learned from someone, huh?
It's so much more visual than his other films. It's,
yeah, it's
directed
like
by
influenced.
Ben Affleck.
It's like he was influenced
by a certain... Yeah, the directing looks amazing.
Yeah. There was one shot in the trailer.
Thank you, James.
What did he say?
Tom Brady.
Yes, exactly. He was probably, though, actually. I mean, you say that in jest, but they're like BFFs now. No, there's one shot in the trailer where it's a corridor. It's a hallway, and you're looking down it, and you see the light coming down, and there's all the different colorization, and you see the beams of light. I was like, did Snyder shoot that shot?
Yeah. It looks beautiful. I think the story could be interesting. The way it's being marketed is not that appealing to me. I think that the line in the trailer is like, "What's the true cost of the American dream?" And it's all these people killing each other. It's like, not really into that. But sometimes the marketing does not match what the movie is actually about. So I'll wait for another trailer before I fully decide on
this. Is the final trailer.
I'll hug or take him out. Right now, this is it's the final trailer? Oh, fuck that movie. Just kidding. I might see this. Maybe I'll see it like when it's in like the second run theater or something.
All right, James?
I think I'll see this once, you know, all DVDs are just made free. And so I can just go to like a trash pile and pick this up. And there's unlimited amounts of time in one's lifespan to just do everything. And so this will be one of the things I waste my infinite amount of time in order to watch, you know, all the movies that exist. I will watch this movie at that point.
Probably a few times.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, this looks. And if the directing and the visuals look appealing to you, I I'm a cretin and I don't understand any of that crap. So, you know, from this is just like, America is about shooting and blowing people up, you know. Yeah, I'm Ben Affleck and I hate America. And from this trailer, so I stopped.
Yeah, that's pretty much why I'm unsure of how to think about this movie. I may actually have to watch his other movies first before I decide whether I want to see this movie or not. Because actually,
Argo was good.
Seen a movie he's directed.
Yeah. I mean, Argo had zero anti-American propaganda in it, as I remember. So, you know, and yeah, he's a good director. Or I don't know. I don't know what the directing means. But, you know, it was a good movie.
Just listen to the Snyder. Go back and listen to the Snyder series before you were on it and you will understand.
That's the definition of directing.
Yes. So speaking of Zack Snyder and speaking of movies being misinterpreted and speaking of only being able to laugh at these people in this ridiculousness now, Screen Rant wrote an article that I am going to quote for you all here. I'm going to read some excerpts from it. It's called "The World Needs the Man of Steel and DCEU Now More Than Ever." And this is a response to the election and basically saying Snyder's Superman and Goyer's Superman actually represents something that people don't realize and they need it in the election. Now, little to add to that. And they need it because of the results of the election. To add to that, that probably sounds good to you guys because that sounds similar to something we say here in the Midside, right? Well, listen to what he says. This is what the author says. And I'm going to jump around here. I'm going to read them in sequence, but I'm leaving out the crap in between that doesn't need to be said. At the time of its release, audiences were heavily divided over Man of Steel. For some, the intended goal of Zack Snyder and David Goyer to tell a modern story of the consummate immigrant and orphan, okay, now you're starting to see where this is going, resonated strongly, reflecting the fact that a modern immigrant story can be an ugly one. For those viewers, the internal struggle of blending in or embracing his heritage of cynicism and fear or hope and trust felt relevant. Jumping forward, Clark Kent sitting in his apartment, this is from, now they're referring to Batman vs. Superman in this next quote. Clark Kent sitting in his apartment, watching others discuss what he should or shouldn't be allowed to do is an experience tens of millions of people know all too well, be they Muslims, immigrants, LGBTQ, or those who rely on social assistance programs. Jumping forward again, it is heartbreaking that so many millions of people now know exactly how it feels to stand in that place. But it's here where the criticism that Zack Snyder's superhero isn't Superman is hard to reconcile. In the United States, the United Kingdom, and elsewhere, millions of people have been painted with a single brush. Their intentions to make the world better, a better and safer place, were rejected, and their hopes of being accepted for who, not what they are, have been dashed by their fellow citizens. It was those people that Superman was always meant to embody, the people that the DCEU Superman has regularly championed. They are the outsiders, the minorities, the immigrants, the other, and the same people who thought up Superman in the first place. He may be famous now, but he began as an idea created by Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel, two shy sons of Jewish immigrant families, creating a character who is everything they were deep down and everything they hoped to be in the world. But the world has changed, and the new Superman has changed with it. As he shows us, there's still heroism in being the outsider, the immigrant, the other, just trying to make the world better. And that, in return, the world tries just as hard to reject you. End quote. Now, I've included this in here because this is not the first time I've seen this argument. I've seen social justice warriors interpret Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman in this way. Rather than me just ranting, what say you, gentlemen?
I'd rather see you rant.
I'm still a little bit... The main thing that's going through my head is I'm still a little bit surprised that social justice warriors apply their ideas to, like, things in popular culture like this, because I'm surprised they kind of have... I'm kind of a little bit surprised they have values, like, oh, I like football, or I like superheroes. Like, well, no, wait, don't you just hate everything? Don't you just, you know, wish the destruction of all values? So I'm a little bit just hung up on, like, oh, hey, these people, like, watch movies and stuff.
Daniel, do you think this is true, or is there evidence against this? And that's a loaded question, obviously.
Well, I'll play the opposite, which is that what is the evidence for this? Like,
that's what I was asking.
the thing that we don't understand nowadays, like when you hear these things, it's like, this Pixar theory will blow your mind, and then it's not actually a theory, it's an assertion, which people don't understand, where it's like, well, what if Andy was a Martian and actually he was the robot in WALL-E but sent back in time? It's like, where's your fucking evidence for any of this? You have no evidence. You're just making assertions.
Crack did a big thing of that, right? Crack did the video of the grand unified theory of Pixar, if you remember.
Made assertion after assertion with no actual evidence to support anything they said. And that is exactly what this guy is doing. And what a lot of social justice warriors do is they say, this is how I'm reading this thing. It interests me as much as this is the Duke that I just took. Would you like to look in the toilet? It's my Duke. Beautiful. I don't fucking care about your Duke or your retarded ass assertions.
This is what I mean. I'm just laughing at these people.
So this is nonsense to me because you provide no evidence. Not you, scream at.
Right. Well, they try to say he's sitting there on the couch watching himself be talked about the way Muslim immigrants and LGBTQ people are talked about.
Right. Where is that anywhere in any of it?
I mean, he sees himself be talked about.
Is there a glance where he looks over at a picture of Osama bin Laden? He's like, you and I, dude.
What this shows me is that it's just more evidence, and I've seen some already, that a lot of basically the leftists who cannot actually think in concept but still kind of ascribe to social justice warriorism, which is an abstract concept, they will just connect anything to their social justice warrior agenda. Just like I remember talking to one leftist. I brought up some kind of issue, and it was an abstract issue. It was on the issue, like, when is it appropriate for the police to use force? And I didn't bring it up in the context of like Ferguson or anything like that. It was just generally like, hey, yeah, like police brutality and like And then I moved it to the more general discussion is like, well, when is it okay for an individual to use force in a self-defense context? And I started talking about that. And she just maneuvered it entirely into the concept of racism. She basically said like, oh, well, if you're allowed to carry around a gun and defend yourself with it, then that could make black people feel unsafe and more prone towards violence. And therefore, like, and that violence they commit wouldn't be their fault because of patriarchy, cisgender, heteronormative. Like, everything just flows back to it because it takes the burden of actually thinking about issues abstractly off of them. They just have to connect it somehow to these issues. And that's what seems like is happening here. They just cannot think in other terms other than these narrow, particular social justice issues.
I think you've done a great job pointing at the psychology that leads to this sort of interpretation. And for the sake of just refuting it, when he's looking at the TV, they're specifically talking about his power and how to use it. They're not talking about him as an immigrant or as an other. And when, no, I think it's important. I just want to say this so the argument is out there. Likewise, Batman, what is Batman's? Do you guys remember what Batman's reason for not trusting him is?
Even well, because he's a black. It's black.
Yes, you got it. No, because if there's an even 1% chance he's our enemy, we must take that as an absolute certainty because of how powerful he is. It's a meditation about a man of ability, not any of these otherness of it. And that's something that, I mean, let's quote Ayn Rand here. Ayn Rand famously wrote, what's the minority that most people don't take seriously? Business. It's the same thing here. We don't take the man of ability as a minority in this culture. And it is. And that's what they're misreading in this article.
Well, that's because there's no even concept that ability is a legitimate thing.
Yes.
Concept of ability was pure luck. It's just whatever you've lucked into in your life is what is important, not what you've done, because you can't do anything.
Yeah, so that's why they don't see it, you're saying.
Yeah, it's completely flies over their head. It wouldn't even be a consideration. If you said that to them, they'd go, Batman was lucky to have been born the parents of billionaires.
So you're saying the point of a Superman movie flies over their head.
By leaps, single bound.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
We're going to be able to say anything better about this segment. So let's move on to our final segment. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. EA blows, Steam rocks, got rest for my firewall. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. Since this is a serious week, because serious things happened in the serious presidential election, we have three serious Reddits here, and I think we're going to be able to get through them pretty quickly. They're sort of reactionary and responsive to the culture and the climate after the election. They touch on some of the things we touched on in the opening news segment. First Reddit: Hey Reddit, how/where do you get your news? And the reason I included this is I think this is an important discussion to have now that the media has sort of been exposed. And now we have this thing today on Facebook, or recently, Daniel, you sent the article that Facebook is going to be more vigilant, apparently, about not having fake news on their site, because apparently the Democrats blame Facebook for losing.
Yeah, it's one of the narratives that's popping up, is that a lot of people got their information about Hillary Clinton from fake news sites that echoed around Facebook, and Facebook didn't do enough to stop them, therefore Hillary Clinton lost, not because she was the worst candidate in Democratic history. So, how and where do I get my news? So, it's not a simple answer, because first is really to do with, I'll say me, like as a human being, but with the universal you, what you should be doing as a human being, which is you should always be a critical thinker and a critical reader when it comes to some sort of selection process over what information you get to receive. You're not there when Hillary gives a speech. You're not there when Trump lays out a policy plan. So you're necessarily relying on people who are selectively picking information. And because they can't bring you everything, it's not verbatim. So first of all, you have to be a critical thinker and a critical reader. Why isn't there other information? Why are they presenting it in this way? Why is the headline written this way, etc.? If you do that, if you get used to that, understand, don't take everything you read as an absolute, unequivocal fact, you're going to just be a good consumer of news, sort of no matter where you get it from. But then the second step is to do opposition, which what I mean is, like, if I see a Fox News story, and I'm not necessarily looking for news in a given place, but let's say I come across a Fox News story and it says tax plan, so we'll save billions of dollars for whatever. And I read it and I go, okay, I want to go over then to, like, HuffPo and see what they're reporting on this story. Trump, you know, names tax plan that only represents the 1%. All right, so we have these opposing narratives. And then the final step in that is, if there is ever a goddamn primary source, unless they're fucking stupid, sometimes there aren't, but if there is, like, let's say he actually releases a document with his tax plan in it, read the primary source. Don't rely on the news interpretation for you. Actually read it for yourself. Get as much firsthand information as you can, and allow the news agencies, if they will, to direct you to those, but don't rely on them solely for their interpretation of the things. On top of that, AP does some good reporting, not in its entirety. A lot of energy, they do good reporting on energy. BBC does some good reporting on foreign affairs. The New York Times actually does fairly good domestic reporting. Their political reporting is fucking garbage, but their domestic sort of news reporting is fine. And yeah, I mean, other than that, it's pretty much all shit.
Yeah, I want to emphasize something you just said. That's something I've been complaining about since undergrad. Whenever I read a news story, my initial reaction isn't, oh, that's true. It's, why was it said in the manner it was said? Why was it presented in that way?
Yeah.
James, it sounded like you were trying to speak up.
Absolutely, because as someone who used to do journalism, and that was my major, and I originally wanted to be a journalist, I can tell you that the vast majority of news is written like this. Here's exactly what I want this article to say. Now I'm going to go out and get quotes from people that support the thing that I want the news article to say. So you have to think about, well, what is the hook of this story? What is the beat of this story, such that they got all these quotes to support it? And I will also tell you, most quotes are, I would say, probably somewhere in the 70-80% range of quotes are completely fucked. They're completely out of context, or they were misheard, miswrote down. They don't double check. They're just fucked. So anything you see as a quote is almost certainly inaccurate, just so you know.
James?
Oh, well, yeah, I can't say. I think that's really great advice Daniel just gave. But to give my sources really quick, is every morning I listen to This Morning with Gordon Deal. It's a podcast. And I also listen to the BBC for my world news. I listen to the BBC podcast for the world news. That's it. And the thing is neither of these, I don't pretend that either of these are really any good. But the main thing I do is I read between the lines. You know, when they say it a certain way, you know, I bring my own interpretations to what they're saying. Like, oh, they're trying, you know, and I try to see the hidden agenda behind it. Yeah, that's all I do.
Woot.
And I would say I get mine in a very millennial way. I'm just all over the place. Just where I pick up things, where I hear things, where I see something being mentioned over and over again on a social network in conversations, and then I Google it and do my own research. So it's not one news source for me. I just learn to, as I said, why is it being said this way, and also, is this source credible? Those are the two things I do.
Yeah.
All right, so Let's move on to the next Reddit 80. Here. White guys of Reddit who are not in good financial and or social standing, do you ever feel left out from the public eye? Like when people campaigning to help women slash minorities, do you ever feel that nobody cares too much about your well-being?
I don't want to answer first again, but I will.
James,
so,
you want to go? Oh, okay.
I already.
Okay.
That was James. To the Reddit.
Yeah. I'll say this. One is for PragerU that everyone should watch, which is basically like run from any politician who says, I'm going to help you. Because they're not going to fucking help you. You have to help yourself. No matter what the politician says, you have to make your life better. Politicians cannot make your life better. So even this sort of rhetoric irks me. As a guy who constantly gets labeled a white dude because I look white, even though I'm Hispanic, I don't feel like the electorate, I don't feel like the body politic or the political class has left me behind. I feel like the entire culture has left me behind. I feel like there's nothing about the culture of ideas in this country that I identify with on a mass level, like basically nothing anymore. I feel like I'm in such a tiny, tiny minority that it gets increasingly difficult to have normal conversations with people who aren't in that tiny minority, which is sad, but it's not limited. I guess my point is that it's not limited to the political realm. So.
Yeah.
Justin, as the angriest white guy.
Well, it sounds like James is saying something. So go ahead, James.
Oh, well, so, you know, you're saying all of that, Daniel, and you're saying that you feel alienated is kind of, I think, the word that you're saying, but it's like, but you're not expecting like some kind of, you know, government committee to make sure Daniel doesn't feel alienated anymore. You know, you don't expect to be taken care of. You know, right. You've taken care of yourself. You found people to support you, not because, you know, you just need to be supported, but just like because you share values with them and they're willing to support you and all of that. This is so amazing to me how it's just someone like, oh, well, what about me? Like all these minority groups are getting all this free shit and stuff. Well, doesn't that mean I need something too? This is what people are talking about when they talk about entitlement culture.
Yes. And that's a very good point, James. The point about my alienation, I should have been more clear, is not that like I sit and stew about this, but that basically I just have to make my own life better. I have to convince more people. I have to find better friends than you two. I have to find, you know, better jobs.
That's my answer more whatever. Pointed.
and I have to make my life the way I want it to be. There's not going to be an external entity or group or government that's going to make my life better. Only I can do that. So, and then one other thing, which is that it is so rare that unless we're in this sort of bashing on social justice mentality mood, that I ever think of myself actually as a race. That I actually even think in those fucking terms. Sometimes a show now, but like when people bring up that Fives and I are in a interracial relationship, I have to think for a second, like, wait, we are? What are you talking about?
Whenever you say that, I think of porn, because that's the only situation in which I care about it being interracial. It's like, oh, this is gonna be
yeah, and it's just like, oh, I guess we are, except that it's never fucking come up between us in any way, other than a joke about it sometimes. but it's so stupid. Anyway, okay. Angry white guy, what were you saying?
Well, strangely with what James is saying, my porn searches and my dating site searches are the same thing. Small Asian
hot
girl
Asian
who likes
sports. Yes.
Yeah, that was sports. Yes, that's what it follows up with.
Saved you there.
I mean, look, I live alone. So sometimes...
Full stop.
You know, sometimes my boss doesn't go into the office on Monday and Tuesday. And, you know, he trusts me pretty explicitly that I do what I need to do. So, like, if I were not to come into work, he would assume something serious was wrong and that I was taking care of it. So, you know, I've kind of accepted the fact that nobody gives a shit about my well-being. And the reason I'm saying all these things is I realized at one point, I go, no, I could die right now and my body wouldn't be found for like 5 days at least. I was like, nobody would know I was dead for 5 days.
I would know.
Would you assume that if I didn't call you, I was dead?
If there was a 48-hour period in which you did not call me, I think something severe had happened, yes.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So, 2 days I could last without anybody giving a shit whether I was dead or alive.
At first, I would not really, it wouldn't register to me because that's not the kind of thing. All I would think of is like, it's been unusually quiet.
Right, that's what I mean. Like, that's how that's how everyone would be. Like, oh, I guess Justin's just busy right now. Do you think I'm gonna fucking worry about if a goddamn, like, Donald Trump was like, hey, white people, and Hillary's like, hey, white people? You think I'm gonna give a shit about that when I could die and nobody would care? No, whatever. Like, moving on with our lives. Fuck off. Like, get over it.
All right. That was a turn I did not expect.
Why?
I don't know. This just wasn't quite the angle I thought you were gonna take on this, but it's all right.
Is that not the objectively correct angle?
Moving on.
All right. Last Reddit. And I'm going to answer this one right away, and then you guys can follow up or not. This is something I feel strongly about, which is why I picked this answer or this question. People who genuinely knows fucking get – what is this? Yahoo Answers? Get the grammar right. Knows and accepts that they are below average within the appearance category – how did you meet your SO? why do you want to know who my superior officer is? I enlisted.
Yes, I was going to make that joke.
Any tips for others that was in your shoes? First of all, learn English. No, here's my answer to this. And this is something I feel very strongly about. And I've said often, if not on the show, in life. I don't believe that the large majority of people are bad looking unless there is something seriously wrong with them. They have some sort of physical deformity or defect or something of that nature. So if you feel that you're not good looking enough and you're below average, take care of yourself. Eat better. Work out more. Dress differently if you're unhappy with the way you look. Most people are not actually bad looking. They just don't take care of themselves.
Yeah, it's actually a very good point, which is you can always change something about yourself that will drastically change how you look, be it glasses, new style in your clothes, you know, all these things, working out, eating, whatever, that can change all these variations. And those little tiny changes make a big difference to people in how you're perceived. And that's really what we're talking about here, right, is how you're perceived. And that also has a lot to do with your attitude. If you walk around all day thinking, oh, I'm shit and ugly and no one's going to like me, that is going to ooze out your pores like you fucking ate 28 raw onions for lunch and it's just dripping out of you.
And you know what's like onions?
No one.
Ogres.
Parfait?
Good, you went one deeper. Wow, you went a level deeper. I appreciate that.
Thank you. So, like, it's not only about your appearance. It's about your attitude. You have to be able to be comfortable with yourself in order that you can be comfortable with other people. And by already, there's, like, some moment where you can objectively think, like, yeah, I'm probably below average in terms of facial appearance or whatever. But then you move on with... Really smart. I'm intelligent. I can play the cello. I can run a marathon. I can do any number of things that I've chosen in my life to be good at, and that makes me interesting and confident in myself. for and fucking move on.
To talk about what Daniel's talking about, I know I'm short, but I also have a big penis, so it works out.
You're in, like Flynn. That's right. Did I use that phrase twice tonight?
Yes, you have. That is your new catchphrase, apparently. Wow. James, do you have anything to add?
It's so old.
It just sounds like this guy has got, it just low self-esteem in general. Like, this isn't, I agree with that. Unless you have some kind of major physical defect, then it's just purely a matter of what you think of yourself, and then as a result, how you present yourself. Although usually I present myself fairly shittily, just because I don't give anything how I appear at all. And now that I have my girlfriend Mackenzie actually helping me try to look better, I actually have noticed, like, I'd say, like, I'm like a 4 out of 10, or maybe like a 3 out of 10 usually, like when I dress in my default, like my dad, and then I could go like just from caring. So that's like, just from trying to wear good clothing and like make sure I'm shaved and like, you know, have a breath mint.
And what can you go up to?
Like an 8. This is just rough judgment. It's like, okay, like I look at myself, what does this guy look like, right? Like a 3. And then it's like, because you can't tell that I'm like at least somewhat in shape. And then if I wear good clothes, I actually look like I'm in much better shape than I even am. So.
Dressing? Yeah, dressing for your body is very important. But one thing I'll say, which is why a male 8 is very different from a female 8, Justin, which is...
What?
This is an Adam Carollaism.
Oh, okay.
Which is that the most fucking important thing to a woman, above of all else, looks, body size, wealth, intelligence, is effort. Women, it's like a river down there when they know effort has gone on. Effort.
But you have just, the two of you have just elucidated. I just use that word sometimes because I think it sounds smart. I don't know if it's right. Elucidated?
Elucidated?
Elucidated.
Yeah. You sound like Jesse Jackson over there. Elucidated?
I sound like Jesse Jackson.
And adjudicated.
I'm laughing
this situation
like Jimmy
Carr. Right here. Yeah. Excellent.
No. Women elucidation on their face. Right.
You to sum up, you guys have just whatevered two catch-22s that guys face. Right, the first that James said is, women can help us look better than we know how to look, but you have to get a woman first in order to have that happen.
Yes, indeed.
So catch-22-ish. And then the other thing you just said is, what did you just say? Repeat your point.
Effort, effort.
Oh,
women
yeah.
love effort.
You have to put in effort before the woman has even really shown interest. But why do you want to put effort into somebody who's not worth the effort?
Because you know that women fucking dig effort. That's the reason. I know it makes no sense, but that is
perfect sense.
Yeah.
We're the ones with the dicks. You gotta go out and you gotta go out there just like a dick. Go out the world. And
you gotta put yourself out there. Yeah.
All right. Well, Daniel, we will have a sidebar about this off of the show. So.
No, I can't wait.
What did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that Doctor Strange might be redeemable because of Benedict Cumberdouche. We've actually said his name, I think, 4 ways on the show today. So. I don't actually know how to say his name.
Cumberbatch.
So I decided to go funny.
Cumberbatch.
Because I've heard Batch.
Ugh! Because he's like German.
No, it is not Cumberbatch, all right?
Cumberbatch, Cumberpatch, Cumberbatch. Yeah. Cumberbun.
Cumberbun.
Yeah.
There you go.
Cumberbun.
In the movie, he's really cool. And they don't undercut his confidence, and I just really dug him as a character. Even when they were trying to make him look like kind of an asshole, I still liked him.
Even though the entire point of the movie was his greatest lesson is you don't matter.
Yeah, but that was bullshit lip service. Like, but Benedict, you know, anyway, the show has to end at some point, so we'll...
All right, what did you learn, James?
Other than the Benedict cucumber stuff.
I learned that apparently, although this is only an anecdote, apparently, you know, entitlement culture has gotten to the point where even a white man feels like he kind of has the right to some kind of entitlement. Like, oh, well, you know, everyone's getting babied and getting all this special treatment. What about me? I found that Reddit very interesting. That everyone is just supposed to, it's like that we're all supposed to just have awareness about each other's problems. We're supposed to have a fucking focus group about it. Everything that's wrong, we need to somehow collectively solve, as opposed to like, you have your psychological problems and you should introspect about it. Or, you know, you have your money problems and you should read The Richest Man in Babylon, or, you know, whatever. It's all this big collective therapy session we're all supposed to go through for every problem every individual happens to have.
I like it. Justin, what did you learn?
All right, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to hang a lantern on something from this episode. I've learned either I need to buy James a new microphone or teach him how to use a microphone, because he sounds like he keeps getting further away and closer to his mic, almost in a pattern.
Oh, that's because because that's literally what's been happening. So sorry about that.
Hey, look at that. He was right next to the microphone, ladies and gentlemen.
No, you had it right, lady. Katrina.
Right. The Seattle Seahawks fan, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I think we all learned great things this week. It was a banner week for things that we learned. And I hope you, the listener, learned something as well. Because if you did, we want to know about it. We want to know what we taught you. In fact, you can tell us over at themidside.com/podcast or all of the social medias, the ones that we hate on every single week. We have a presence on every single one. That would be Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, fucking Snapchat.
Yeah.
All at the midside.
Snapchat That's me right. your dick. Wait, I mean Snapchat me for my dick.
Yes, one of those. We do have a lot of gay listeners. So, thanks so much for joining us. One of the things that that has actually just insanely helped this show from anecdotal evidence, but that's the only kind of evidence I believe in anymore, is the telefriend. Really, telling a friend has, I think, quadrupled the audience of this show in a very short period of time. So if there is someone you think would like to hear us talk about dick pics and whatnot, turn them on to Welcome to the Midside. Turn them on in general, but then turn them on to Welcome to the Midside. You can tell them to go to iTunes.
Use Welcome to the Midside to turn them on.
Oh. That's when you're, getting down and dirty, don't put on Barry White. Put on Justin and James and Daniel.
And that Nothing's will be hotter more than people that. That my voice has turned on than I have done personally.
Indeed. So, you can tell them to go to iTunes and search for The Midside. Comes right up there in the list. You scroll past fucking Night Vale. Fuck those bitches.
Beehive. Fuck the
Midside.
Beehive.
That's right, those Beehive bitches. Google Play. Yeah, I know. I don't know why we are, but we are. You can also stream us if you're interested through the Liberty.me iTunes account, which very generously broadcasts us to their large network of libertarian anarcho-capitalists, which is fantastic. We love you, anarchos. And then, of course, there is Patreon.
Oh, Patreon.
Patreon.com/themidside. Patreon, for the uninitiated, is the place where you can go and actually give us money, real money, for doing this show. Not just like money like $9.99, plus shipping and handling kind of fucking bullshit. But like, let's say you want to give us a dollar every time we produce one of these crazy shindigs over here. That's awesome. And then if we don't produce one week, you get to keep your dollar. We're not even going to take your dollar from you. We're not even like the government. You don't have to pay. That's how it works.
And I want to be clear. I decide what episodes go up there. So it's not just automatic from the iTunes stream. So even though you're seeing other shows now in the iTunes stream, you're seeing RJD's A Shot of Madness, you're seeing My Survivor Cast, those are not part of Patreon. Patreon is only for this show.
Welcome to the mid-aside. Yes. So thanks for all the loyal fans out there. We have a great Patreonic audience. Helps us keep the lights on.
Those lights are really expensive, you guys. It's a multi-dollar operation, and the lights just stay on all the time.
That's right. And so thanks so much. We appreciate it. Tell a friend. Keep the lights on. Like everything. Yes, I think I did. And yeah, we love you. See you later.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, like we know they did this past week, take a step back and witness the farce.
This is episode 41, right?
I guess. I don't know. The numbers are kind of... Eh.
All right, fuck it. Yeah.
We are recording.
Yeah.
All right, silence.
Yeah.
As I just mentioned, wow, fucking, I'm a Mario.
Yeah.
For the sixth day in a row, did James just fall over?
My microphone fell over.
Oh my god, dude. Get it together, man. Like, I have to do so much editing right now.
That's awesome.
We'll cut it.
Yeah, no shit. I'll cut it, you mean.
Secret bonus content. James falls out of his chair.